What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
How many discounts does USAA auto insurance offer? Too many to say here. Multi-vehicle discount, safe driver discount, new vehicle discount, storage discount, legacy.
How many discounts will you stack up? Tap the banner or visit usaa.com/auto discounts. Restrictions apply.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast. I am your host, Dan Johnson, and we have a familiar guest back on the show, Mr. Cameron Stover. Cameron, dude, what's up?
Hey, buddy. It's good to talk to you. It's been a while.
Yeah. You slay any giants this year?
I did. So I had a target buck in mind going into the hunting season. He showed up a little bit during velvet. Come October, first cold front, he was on his feet. Broadside 20 yards, and I didn't make a good shot. He ducked an arrow. I hit him high, and I spent the next 2 months trying to capitalize on him again. And it worked out. I know we're close.
Look at that Rautine. Holy shit.
Yeah.
And so, is that a Virginia buck?
That's Ohio.
Ohio. Okay, Ohio.
Yep. Yep, I came off my farm in Ohio. Biggest deer we've killed on that farm so far. It took me 2 months almost to the day to see him again on foot, but it worked out, man. It was one of those hunts where you felt like it was down to the wire, and you got a late muzzleloader season coming up, and I thought, it's either now or never. And yeah. He came back in 20 yards, and that was all she wrote that time.
That's crazy, man. So let me ask you, this is where I become intrigued, is after you shot him and did not kill him, what did he do? Did he just ghost, or was he around but nocturnal? Like, what's the deal?
So I spent about 3 days looking for him. So I put a lot of pressure in the area because, honestly, with the shot placement, I thought if I got enough into those lungs, he's okay. Turned to find out he wasn't. Never found really any good sign. Mm-hmm. But on the seventh day, he showed back up at night on one of my cameras on my food plot. He did not daylight probably more than five times in the 2 month time frame in which I shot him and I killed him. Yeah. There was two times that I knew that I could have killed him had I been in the stand or the blind. Because he was coming through at the right time. But the truth of the matter is, it was just a really hard deer to kill. And that was kind of the goal for the rest of the season. If you've ever wounded one and that early in the season, you feel like you're just got to devote the rest of that hunting season to trying to kill that deer, and it paid off. A lot of times it doesn't, but luckily for me, all the crops got cut nearby, and I had the food.
Yeah. Well, and so what was the date that you killed this buck on?
Oh, I'd have to scroll back. Mid-December.
Okay, so it was post-rut.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so from the injury and the rut, he was really wound down. He still rutted. He still was bumping, chasing does and stuff like that. But, man, he just steered clear of my property during daylight for almost 2 months. Yeah. This was a deer that in velvet, he was around, and he was running with another buck at one time. I had a couple decent shooters come through the property throughout the year, but he was the only one that I was really, like, heart set on trying to capitalize on. But I'll give you a date exactly.
It's all good. I just wanted to know. 12th, okay. So
yep.
Post-rut, leading, like, back end of the bell curve. Dude, that must have felt really dang good.
I've killed a lot of deer. And, like, this is an 8-point of this caliber doesn't come around too often, but the relief of being like, I did my job. Like, even though this deer was 100% fine, he was not hurt and no lingering injuries. Like, you couldn't even tell that he had been shot when we skinned him out and stuff. But the truth of the matter is, like, you just have that gut feeling like you got to finish the job. And it felt really good.
Yeah. I've never really been able to do that. Like, I've shot a deer, but I've never really been able to go back out and attack him. Like, 2 years ago, I probably could have. But the farm that I hunting was 3 hours away, and I had already done an out-of-state hunting trip. All my bridges were burned and things like that. And I wish I could have gone back and chased him down, because I got nocturnal pictures of him, and I knew that once the rut was over, he was going to get back into this same bed to food pattern, but I never had the opportunity to actually go and commit more hunting time to that buck. Sucks.
Yeah, I kind of have to agree that this is the same situation. Like, I've wounded a deer before, like, there's no doubt about that, but this one is the first one that was on my home farm, and I could sit back, reduce the pressure on it, and wait rather than going in and hunting just to hunt, and that's what I did. I've let him feel safe again. It took 2 months, but there we are.
Yeah. All right. I'm glad you got him, dude. It must have been a great feeling. So.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Hunting Gear Podcast. Let's say thank you to our sponsors real quick. Code Blue Sense. If you're looking for real or synthetic deer urines, if you are looking for probably one of my favorite mock scrape kits that are available out there, the Rope-A-Dope Mock Scrape Kit, go check that out. It's available now in a 2-pack, which is more convenient and efficient. Outside of that, they have scent elimination, like sprays, body washes, detergents, all that stuff. Go to codebluescents.com, discount code NFC20. Next is Reveal Trail Cameras. They have the new 3.0 versions of those trail cameras out and ready to go. Here's the cool thing I really like about these cameras. And Cameron, do you remember your first cell cam? How hard it was to set up?
Yeah.
Just, you had to go, like, I believe the first cellular trail camera I ever tried to use, I had to go to a cellular store, buy the SIM card, set up the plan, then enter a whole bunch of numbers into that, then relate that back to some website somewhere, and it would take like hours to set up one trail camera.
Yeah, so I had a certain brand, and Verizon was the activated carrier, but not only one store in the area was able to do it. So you would bounce from store to store trying to figure out who understood what a cellular trail camera was at the time. Yep. But, man, those reveals, you literally just scan a QR code. As long as you got the app downloaded, it's quick, easy. I can upload those cameras to my mobile app 3 or 4 at a time on the way to the stand or the place.
Whatever.
Can't beat it.
No, it's so quick, man. And I'm glad you said it. Now I don't have to. So go to tacticam.com/cameras and check out the 3.0 versions of the reveal. So I like those cameras, guys. Outside of that, we're done. Go check out my company, fullsneakgear.com. Now, Cameron, for those of you, you who have listened to this podcast before, was a contributor for a while for the Hunting Gear podcast through his company, huntinggeardeals.com. And today we're going to talk a little bit about the ATA show. I have him on here every year to talk about that show because I've since stopped going to it. I probably need to start going a little bit more, but every time I talk to you, you make it seem like it's not that fun as much as fun as it used to be. So, I'm just going to kind of pass the mic to you here real quick. And I just want to say, like, what was fun and exciting about the ATA show, if anything, this year, from a product standpoint?
So, a little background story. I had no intentions on going to the ATA show this year. We were in the process of moving my in-laws and just didn't have the time with a baby at home and stuff. So, I was like, it's off the radar. Well, my wife wakes up the first day of the ATA show and she's like, hey, I'm not going to go to work today if you want to go to that show that you were talking about. And I'm like, it's not how this works. Like, it's a 4 or 5 hour drive. So, 5 a.m., I woke up, showered, hit the road, started making calls like, hey, how can I get in? So I got in, and everything worked out. So my first thing, having no game plan, no communications prior to, I want to go to the Innovation Zone. I want to see what's new. I hit the Innovation Zone and the new product showcase, and I was very disappointed.
Okay. Now, oftentimes, here we have kind of like a two-way street here, the Innovation Zone. It's great when there is, in the new product zone, it's great when there is a new product to get excited about. But do you think that we are in a time of, from a product standpoint, where we've hit some really good products and we don't necessarily need to change any of these products to make them worthwhile and get people excited about?
And you're exactly right, like nail on the head. We're at a point in time where technology is kind of equaled what supply and demand wants to be. There's not a lot of need for innovation. I don't believe that you need a new bow every year because the technology on that bow is just like the previous 3 or 4 years. Broadheads, like I didn't see anything in the broadhead market that was like, that's what I want to switch to because I've already found a broadhead that works for my setup time and time again in years past. There's a couple little things here and there that you see that is going to improve the quality of your hunting experience. And that's the one thing that I look at the end of the season. I take reference of all the gear that I use, what I broke, what I lost, and what I want to improve. And that's my goals going into the ATA show. What is here that's going to enhance my hunting experience? And I mean, we're at a point in time right now to where I don't want to call it a stalemate. I just feel like innovation has caught up to where we are right now in a hunting culture.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I will say, so for here's a perfect example. You mentioned broadheads. One of my favorite broadheads on the market is Wasp 3-blade jackhammer. Okay. I've used that exact blade, that same exact head for over 10 years easily, probably closer to 15. All right. I love it because I'm confident with it. Now, and you talk to anybody at Wasp, and they're like, we have a really good broadhead. We don't necessarily need to change the wheel on our product line. It's really good. People come and buy it. It may not be the hippest, slickest brand on the market, but our products work. They're made in America, and the metal or the material and the design are really well, right? So recently, I think this year, they introduced something called a CBW, which just stands for cut both ways. And so it's a they've taken an older, I think it's the sharpshooter broadhead. It's a fixed blade. And then the back part of the blades now have a cutting surface on it. And that's it. That's I wouldn't call that necessarily innovative, but it's something new that they've tried to do to really kind of step up their game for, and I don't want to say be stagnant for all those years, because that's not what it is, but it's just a little something, something that's going to change about some of their broadheads, which is what it is, right?
Yeah. So with archery, especially and a gun shooter, what's the one thing you have to have? And it's consistency. A lot of guys, like, I used to shoot my bow every day for 6-7 months before hunting season. I loved it. I don't have that kind of time anymore. Yeah. I want to be able to pick up my gear that I'm shooting this year, and I need to go buy arrows. I need to go buy broadheads. I want to go be able to find those on the shelf so I know I have the same amount of confidence going into this season as I did last year. Those jackhammers you talked about, I can remember my buddy Kevin having jackhammers on in his bow shop at the age of like 18. You're talking almost 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And those jackhammers, they've changed a little bit. But at the end of the day, man, I can remember him telling me like, hey, when you get your poundage up, like, these are a great broadhead to shoot. I wasn't there yet. But at the same time, like, it's still usable today. And like, I don't chase that innovation and the new product launches too much anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you walk in, you're disappointed. What did you see at the innovation zone or the new product zone that was there, even though maybe it didn't excite you?
Yeah, so the quick step, I walked over to the innovation zone. You're talking like 6 or 8 people there in that innovation zone, some familiar faces of products that guys have their hopes and dreams on bringing to market, and it just hasn't caught on yet. And then a seed company here or there. There wasn't anything in that innovation zone that caught my attention. Yeah. I can remember walking through the innovation zone in years past, and the same guys you were talking to now have a 20-foot booth now, and they've got a huge, nice business that they're operating because it started out of that innovation zone. I didn't see anything there that I thought, like, hey, this is where I want to be at in the long term.
Yeah, and I can remember for a while, it seemed to me like it was the climbing stick game that was really popular, especially once you got into the carbon game or the, but now it seems like almost every climbing stick, saddle, or tree stand company has a carbon offer now. Maybe not in the tree stand side of things, but definitely in the platform side of things and the climbing stick side of things for the saddle guy. It just seems like now carbon was hot. It's an offering now. And then there really hasn't been a next step in the lightweight game because, I mean, really, how light can you go?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're nailing the head. Timber Ninja was one of those companies that you would find in the innovation zone at one time, and then now look at them. I mean, they make some of the best products in that mobile hunting space, and there's a lot of other companies that do that. But at the same time, like, how much lighter do we need? Like, are we talking ounces here between Magnite and carbon and aluminum? At the end of the day, like, I'm carrying around that extra weight right here. Like, I can stand to put an extra pound in my pack.
Yeah. Yeah. So as you're going through these two areas, did you feel like it was, were there products more dedicated to the actual product? Like what we just talked about, climbing sticks, tree stands, the actual product that you need to go hunting, or was it more about making the hunter comfortable, like a different kind of sock or maybe a little body heater or adhesive things that cool you down or anything like that? Or was it truly just like, oh, I've seen all these things before, why are they new or innovative?
Yeah, I'm gonna have to say, like, a lot of this was like, this is the next version of what we made last year. We made the wheel a little bigger. The pins are a little brighter. Just things of that nature. The targets, here's a new species, or we changed the ring systems on it. Mm-hmm. Things of that nature. There wasn't much that you walk through there and you're like, wow, that's really impressive. Like, and I would imagine that in order to be in that product showcase, you got to pay a little extra money. But I found products out in the show that I really liked, but they weren't really featured in that product launches and product showcase situation.
Yeah. So it's almost like it's just an additional SKU that they brought to market of a different product. And I'll use site specifically. Yeah. One thing that I saw is like, hey, because you guys asked, now we have the same site as last year, just with a smaller pinhead type of deal.
Exactly. Yeah. Or the wheel's a little different, or now it fits on the bridge lock system and things like that. So, but at the end of the day, like, where do you need to advance to with the sights that you have now? Like, some of them are $700-$800. Like, I don't want to put any more money into my bow already.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you got money to spend, I guess go for it. And obviously, if a company's smart, they're doing a little bit of research and they're saying, well, you know, our clients are asking for it. And if they're asking for it, we might as well try to build it. I mean, what's that site now? Is it Locked In? Or what's that site that's like, it's really expensive now?
Yeah,
it's a wheel.
I can picture them. They got a little open wheel on the side. Yep. Looks like I can't think of it right off. But you're that's a big investment. You could buy a bow for what you have in accessories.
Yeah, almost. That's crazy. But they're popular, right?
So absolutely.
So hardcore dudes are buying them.
Yep. And the truth of the matter is, just like I get caught up in some of the times the marketing side of it, and I'm like, if he tells me it's the best, like, it's got to be the best, so let's go do it.
And some happens. Stranger, you got to have this product. It's $1,000, but you got to have it. All right, I'll buy it. Okay, outside of that, like, anything else other than, like, different SKUs or different versions of the old thing?
So, did see a little bit of differences. Some of the products you walk by and you look at one time and you're like, man, that's not really what I'm here to see. And then you think, get back and you're like, I could probably actually use that. And a couple of those products would be the new tethered saw. Like, I thought when I seen it, I was like, oh, they just have a saw just like everybody else. Went on by it. And then I was like, oh, you can hook it onto a tree branch. You don't have to carry a 8-foot long pole saw anymore. Yeah. Seems pretty cool. And you can cut your own tree branch as long as you're probably not on public. But I thought that was pretty neat after the fact. And I think they won an award from ATA. Another product that won an award that really caught me off guard and I just couldn't get past it was a wind detection accessory holder that goes on your bow. And that was like the third place award winner.
A wind detection system that goes on your bow.
Yeah, just a little puffer, and it just has a little holder that fits, like, you could put it on your quiver, you can attach it to your bow, your limbs, or whatever, and it just makes it convenient to just go poof, poof, and puff a little bit of smoke out. I'm just thinking, like, where this right here sums it up. Like, if you're that's a third place technology advancement winner or whatever, like, we've hit a peak.
Yeah, we've hit a peak or a plateau.
Yeah,
sure.
best in show, third place.
Yeah.
And not to knock that product, that's a cool little $10 product.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, but the technology, guys, like, that's, you can probably make it on a 3D printer at home.
Yeah. What were first and second at the innovation zone?
First and second was the Expedition Archery X-Lite 32 bow. Second was a Striver Gear quick release bino harness. The bow, I didn't shoot, and not because I didn't want to shoot it, but when I looked at dealers in my area, I was more than an hour away from a local dealer.
Yeah.
And I thought, I've been down this road with another brand before, and it's great, enjoyed the bow, but when it came time to having the bow serviced and or any issues that might arise, I don't have anybody to help me.
Yeah.
And I live in a populated area, so... they got first place, like, they're doing something right. I know the technology behind it is there. It's a lightweight, nice, ergonomically designed bow that I would probably enjoy shooting, but I chose not to even test it because I know it's a product that I shouldn't buy if I can't have service. It's like buying a car.
Yeah.
If there's no garages that's going to work on this Range Rover or Volvo or whatever nearby, it doesn't do me any good when I break down or need an oil change.
What was did you check the price tag on that bow?
I did not. I could probably pick that up pretty quick. So that X-Lite's $18.99.
So it's just under $2,000. Yeah. Holy smokes.
And you look, that's where a lot of these carbon Maglite bows are going to be at price range because you're pushing the envelope for the lightest materials possible, the best engineering designs they can bring to market. So it's a steep price tag.
I don't know, man. Like, is it worth it? That's my question. Is with everything else that's out there, like, I mean, I've been shooting the same bow for 4 years now, and I really like it. This year, I'm only going to get a new bow. I'm only going to buy a new bow because I feel it's damaged. Like, I feel like my cams are broken and the riser might be bent, not by anything they did, but because of what I do to it and what, the my kids have done to it, or what they said they didn't do to it, but I think I know better. Anyway, I just it seems crazy to me that there's these, obviously inflation is real all over every product in the world, but to start hitting this $2,000 mark when just 5 years ago I feel like $700 was the flagship bow for a lot of these brands. I mean, that's a huge jump.
Yeah, you're getting to the point to where it's almost not economical to go into those flagship bows anymore and wait. And if you buy one today and you try to resell it next year to buy next year's model, guess what? I'm probably going to scoop that up at half price.
Right.
And that's been traditionally like what most bows retail for versus what they're going to resell for.
Right.
But the truth of the matter is, like, it's hard to justify saving 2 ounces and spending an extra $500 or more.
Yeah. This is where I would love to talk to some of the marketing people within the bow companies. Like, how do you get people excited? Like, obviously every brand has their fanboys, right? And so anytime a new tethered product comes out, anytime a new bow manufacturer comes out, there's going to be a core group of guys that are like, I don't care what it is, I got to have it, right? But is that core group big enough to make a profit on that, on those types of products? It must be, right? It must be. And then the marketing that has to, the marketing that goes into it to excite the demographic, man, that just seems like it's just hard work.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I mean, a lot of times we get in a situation as if I'm not buying the most expensive bow that this company makes, and I'm selling myself short. Mm-hmm. So even though they raise their prices, like, I know if I want to shoot and be the best, I've got to shoot the best. Mm-hmm. And if you're if you wear a Matthews hat or a Hoyt hat or an Expedition hat or PSC hat, whatever the case may be, we get into that fear of missing out. Right. They call it FOMO.
FOMO.
And you feel like if I don't have that bow that weighs 3.8 pounds versus 3.95, like I don't have the best, and I'm not going to be the best hunter that I can be.
Yeah. My wife has FOMO, by the way. She has it when her friends go do something and she can't go do it. She has fear of missing out.
I have that when I watch my buddies go hunting and I don't get to go.
Fair enough. And then the other thing is like, okay, what was cool about this, the second place, the quick-release bino harness?
So I have a hard time with bino harnesses and the prices they bring to market. Some of them, $200 or something. This one's like $170. But basically, from the top, it just has a quick release. Like, it's got like a little hood that fits really well and protects those bino, and then you can grab them, flip them out pretty quick. There's probably more to it with the snaps and the buckle systems and all that. It's not a product that I utilize. Like, I'm the type of guy, like, I just throw it around me like a woman throws a purse. I have my binos and I go and I beat them up and stuff like that, or throw them in the backpack. Like, I don't like things on my chest.
Yeah.
I don't feel comfortable shooting a bow and stuff like that. So I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to it. But I'll kind of pull up a little bit of it. As I ramble on a little bit.
And what was the brand again?
It is a Striver Gear quick release harness.
Okay.
And I know I've got that sitting here somewhere, because I was looking into it before. Yeah, I don't see it.
All right. Yeah, okay, cool. Back. It's lighter weight. It does something faster. Like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like it's more convenient to access those binos. There's no Velcro or anything like that. It's like a magnetic system or something that covers your binos. I activated it. It looked nice. Yeah. It looked like it was quick and easy to utilize. And it says it's the first of its kind, a quick-release bino harness. You can attach pouches and accessories and things like that. It looks like it's well-built. It doesn't look like it's overbuilt. It doesn't look like it's got a bunch of junk that weigh you down, anything like that. But it's supposed to help you reduce the movement and amount of work that it takes to get to your products, or whether your binos or rangefinder pouch or anything like that you add to it. And it's just a magnetic system. And I can't say that there's not a bino harness that has that technology on the market or not, because I don't get into that market too well.
Yeah. Okay, I'm kind of seeing, it looks like they have like a chest system, and then they have the pouch or pack, the pouch that quick connects onto it can be easily released. There's a YouTube video. You can go to their website, like strivergear.com, and they have a video, and you can watch it if you're interested in it. Outside of that, as you started moving away from those two areas and you started to walk the showroom floor, was there any buzz about anything? Because sometimes you hear about it. It may not be in the new innovation zone. Any material, new uses of material, anything exciting?
So there was really two booths that stayed busy basically all day. That was Arsenal and Tethered. And they bring a ton of people with them, so you kind of have that big group setting anyways. But Arsenal had a ton of accessories to get. They have some really cool saddle platforms and things like that as well. But their backpacks, man, they just had so many different options for backpacks.
Yeah.
And they look like they're really well made. I was thoroughly impressed with the innovation they brought to the backpack market. Custom fit for their products on the mobile hunter. That's one of the things that I have right now is a weakness is my pack setup for my mobile gear. So that was one of the things that I was personally looking for. And they had a few options that I thought would fit my hunting style, not be too much, but also not allow me to not prevent me from bringing into the woods what I needed.
Right. Right. And so Arsenal put are they just a backpack company then?
Oh no, they've got saddles, they've got platforms and sticks, and they've got the climbing stick aiders. But they're basically a mobile hunting brand that is doing a little bit of everything. They've even got the carbon sticks, but when you see their platforms, like they're like razor thin, and that's kind of what they're known for. They look like they could be used as a weapon in battle, even. Like, it's pretty cool what their branding looks like, and it just kind of translates through their product line. But for me, it was the backpacks that they had showcased that was really the most impressive for this season, this year.
Gotcha. That Max double step climbing stick aider does look pretty interesting.
Yep. Huh. They had it, and it's pretty stable looking, and it might clank around a little bit when you're setting it up as far as making a little bit of noise if it hits, but so do my climbing sticks if I'm not careful with them as well. But pretty nice little setup. It looks like they're coming on strong in that mobile hunting market, and 2 years ago, like, I don't remember hearing about them.
No, I don't either. Obviously I'm looking at their website for the first time, and obviously I haven't been to a lot of shows in a while either. So there is, I do need to get back into this just a little bit more so I stay up to date. Yep. We're coughing machines today. Holy shit. Let's see here. Now Tethered, that's interesting because I feel like, I don't know, I can remember a long time ago when I started going to ATA shows and when I started going to consumer shows, there was a product out there that you could connect a pole saw to a branch to make a saw to a branch to make it a pole saw. How does it connect to the stick?
It's like almost like a snap ring, and they kind of crank out. So imagine taking a stick through two eyes and then bending them to where they lock in place. Pretty sturdy and stable. It didn't have anything else other than it just like a locking mechanism, and they kind of turn to the outside of the saw. Pretty neat. I figured you might know a little bit more about pole saws and that kind of stuff than I would.
I just remember going to, you know, when I was working for Wicked Tree Gear, they had different types. So I wonder if this was I need to talk to those guys and get them on here, because I'm curious if they just bought a company and absorbed it or they bought the technology and they're leasing the technology or something like that. Because I felt like that kind of product has been out there for a while. But with that said, I don't know. I don't know if it's new innovation from them or if it's something they acquired.
And that happens a lot, I think, in not only our industry, but a lot of industries, is you'll see something come to market, and then 10 years later, a few years later, somebody else with a bigger brand or a better marketing push will say, like, hey, this is our new product. And then you're like, oh, my gosh, they invented the wheel. Like, this is the greatest thing ever. And you're like, I've been using this same thing from a different brand for, like, 10 years. Like, where have you guys been?
Yeah. And because let's be honest, a lot of that happens not just in the hunting space, but in the world. The company that comes out with it has a great idea, but they don't know how to market it, or they don't have the money to market it. You know, a company like Tethered, they're probably number one in the space right now.
Oh, absolutely.
They're huge. Yep. And now they are sitting here, they're able to go, you know, we do have the marketing budget for this, you know, basically guys can't sell it. They give up, and it's just another accessory to them that they can add to the shop. But
so,
what's special about it is I can't. Oh, go ahead.
About like innovation and all these things. So the guy that owns FireKnock, and you think of FireKnock, you think of Lighted Knox. He told me how many patents he had one day, and he's a foreign descent, so it's harder for me to understand when he's talking because he gets really excited about what he can do because he's highly, highly intelligent. And he runs basically a one-man show he's basically his own lawyer, his own innovation, marketing guy. Like, he does everything. And the amount of patents he has in our industry and the technology that he can bring to improve even a crossbow and things like this, like, it just blew my mind. And I wish that he would have, like, you could showcase him a little better and have like a good translator, because he's such a wealth of knowledge, more so than anybody I've ever had a one-on-one discussion with in the hunting industry. It blew my mind. And some of his technology is way ahead of the curve, but it has no marketing push. It doesn't have the big wheel behind him of the branding and things like that. And if it did, it'd be hard to guard. Like, he's on it when it comes to technology and advancements.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. I'm watching a little video right now of that saw. I mean, just from the looks of it, it looks badass. Yep. It looks like a badass saw. Were you able to put your hands on it at all?
Yeah. So at first I was like, oh, look, Tethered's got a saw. And then I just moved on. Then I came back and I was like, okay, that looks a little different when it's on the tree branch. So I went back and I was like, okay, it's a well, nice built saw that locks in really sturdy. Would I use it? Probably. Am I going to buy it? It's not on my to-do list, but I can see exactly why you would want it.
Yeah, I will say this, that what they're playing with right now on this video, and I'm watching the guy put the stick in it right now, and then it kind of, he's pulling it down, and then it's locking in. Okay, I see it. That's way more sturdy than the product that I used back in the day. And so that is rock solid. Back in the day, I was looking, I think it was just like rubber straps that kept it together. You know what I mean? Rubber straps, and then they would get loose, and then you would get pissed and you'd throw your saw. This is not like that at all. You're right. Rock solid. That's crazy, man.
And it's such a simple looking design too. Like, it's one of those things, like, and you do it every year. You walk by a booth, you're like, dang it, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty badass. And it connects to your saddle as well.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, you can climb, connect a tree, anything to the saddle with a little hook.
Yep. Cool. Cool. All right. So those are some cool products. Outside of that, what else?
So one of the things that caught my attention, and I don't know if I would buy it because let's face it, there's a ton of clothing brands on the market right now, but Rivers West had a display for their waterproof camo, soft outer shell, waterproof membrane inside, wasn't real loud to the touch, and what I liked about it is when I would press, a lot of times when garment gets saturated and you put pressure on it, it forces that water through that membrane and you get wet on the inside. That's how
100%.
Yeah. So when I tested that, it didn't get wet. Now, maybe it was a showpiece, but they had it running the whole show with this water going over it. Every time I went by it, I tested it, and it was exactly the way they said it was, a silent or quieter waterproof garment that was lived up to the hype. As far,
what was
so
that
I would
again?
Be interested.
River's Edge?
Rivers West. Yeah, Rivers West rain gear.
Rain gear. Okay, I'm pulling it up right now. Rivers West. Shop now. Pretty cool website. Okay. I'm looking at it. Original waterproof fleece. So are they treating it like it's breathable still? Like a breathable piece?
Or
is this actually rain gear?
No, he said he's like, it's not that breathable.
Okay.
It's just quieter than what most of the competitors are in this space.
Yeah.
And that was the kind of the selling point. It waterproof, actually proof, and quieter.
Gotcha. All right. And that's what you need in your rain gear. I mean,
exactly.
Almost all rain gear that I've ever used is louder. Especially,
yeah.
I don't know about you, but have you ever tried to wear a rain jacket and draw back on a deer? It could be quiet, but it's still loud to me. They may not
hear
it, but it's still loud to me. So
yeah, you just hope that it's raining during the time you got to draw back, so you have a little bit of less
quiet.
Friction and,
yeah.
And something to cover up the noise.
Absolutely. So that seemed like a pretty cool product. Did you do any diving into what was different about it?
For me, as far as the technology and stuff like that, like we didn't dive deep into it. When I put my hand back in there and pressed on it, that was enough for me to circle back. I don't think that the technology was, as far as being in-depth, that individual was prepared to have those in-depth conversations that an engineer would have.
Right.
That was there to showcase it, but they had that setup that was really nice. but it was almost like two garments in one.
Gotcha.
Like it was definitely two different membranes, and the waterproof membrane on the inside and that fleece on the outside that was still waterproof, and it wasn't thick enough to where it would absorb water and hold it on the exterior. Now, granted, there might be a lot of other options out there on the market that are just as good, but they did a really good job marketing it and showcasing that at the show to make it really simple and easy for me to walk by and be like, that's different.
Yeah.
Let's look at this.
Yeah. So I'm on their website right now, and it says 100% waterproof. And then it says, we spent 2 years and $2 million developing our award-winning original waterproof fleece, and later 16 months on our advanced waterproof fleece, or original waterproof fleece, and 16 months on our advanced waterproof fleece to provide people with comprehensive waterproof garments. Quiet. As well. So, I don't know if you're looking for rain gear for an upcoming Western, like a big Western hunt, or just if you live in the South and it rains a lot, you might want to, and I haven't even pulled my hunting gear out or my rain gear out in the Midwest for what seems like years now. And so this might be something to look into if you're a hardcore guy.
And the prices from looking around and stuff, the prices are not bad.
No, doesn't look like it at all.
I mean, you're talking $100, $120 for a jacket. Yeah,
yep.
You can't touch that in the higher end markets for rain gear.
Right. Cool, man. And so usually what happens is when something becomes popular, then they raise the price, not because of the technology, but because they're popular, and that's it.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Or somebody comes in, scoops them up, and like, okay, we're going to double the price overnight because we own it.
Yep, exactly. Absolutely. What else? What else we got from the ATA show that sparked your interest?
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
So we had Goat Gear on the show last year, and one of the products that always stuck out to me with them was their Arctic top and bottoms, and it was just a heavy fleece base layer that just looked like something you would want to wear and stay warm. So I actually got to touch that, and I was really impressed. Like, they've got a great lineup. I really like what he's doing. And
Arctic, what's the company name? I'm going to look it up.
It's called Goat Gear.
Oh, Goat Gear, that's right.
Yeah, so Brett is basically the one-man band behind a clothing brand, and it's been fun to kind of watch him grow this from start to finish and the testing process. And
okay.
It's kind of that, like, underdog story that you want to cheer for and root for.
Yep.
And clothing-wise, like, he offered everything that you would kind of want, he's got, he's in the process of kind of bringing to market. He's got his own camo pattern, so it's pretty cool to just watch, like, a one-man band compete in this big market. But yeah, those Arctic bottoms and tops, I really want that.
Yeah. They not only look like they would really be warm, I guess you would say, but they also look like they would be very comfortable next to skin.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Were you able to try on any of this stuff?
No, wasn't able to try it on, but, like, you could get your arm underneath it and feel what it felt like next to skin and stuff, and it was definitely a product that, who knows, maybe be too warm for me to hunt in most scenarios.
Yeah.
But it looks like it would be super warm. And layer that under a good, with a good base layer, and as you said, as a mid layer, even
insulation
it
layer,
like it was great.
Yeah, I could see something like this being used if you keep it dry, out west, like when you're glassing. Pop that on over top of your base layer, and then put use it as an insulation layer, not necessarily like a down insulation layer, but I see this being a base layer for really cold, like underneath bibs for really cold, late season hunts.
Yeah, I agree. So it was nice to see a product that you admired online and get to see it firsthand for the first time.
Yeah.
But as far as new things, like targets, so that was one of the big things at the show this year was this just tons of 3D targets, which you're used to and stuff.
Yep.
But there was this company called Wildcrete 3D or Wild Creek Targets, and it's CRETE at the end. Mm-hmm. But basically, they have this crazy 3D design targets, like from African game animals to like almost Mothman looking fantasy style werewolves and stuff like that. Yeah. Like, it just had so many options. Now, the problem is they don't have replaceable cores like a Reinhardt and stuff like that, so it's more like a one time purchase rather than an investment.
Yeah.
The foam didn't quite feel as good and things of that nature, but it was, for if you had a backyard range, like, it would have been pretty cool to be like, hey, you want to go shoot this wild, crazy-looking creature? Like, something like that. Like, and they had way more options than what I ever expected to see.
Yeah. I'm out on their website right now. This is crazy. It looks, I mean, the realism of these targets looks pretty good.
Yeah, they've got a werewolf, they've got a little T-Rex looking thing, then you've got regular warthogs and Cape Buffalo, like huge
Cape Buffalo,
stuff.
Yeah.
That's a nice giant tick. Like, who wouldn't want to kill a giant tick? Like, I get that.
I hate ticks, dude.
Yeah, sure, you and me both, buddy.
A goblin pirate.
Yeah, so it's just like, and some of these are like, the printing on them looks like they're 3D, but like, you don't have anything special other than it's a big chunk of foam, it's well painted. Yep. And a dot system or target system to shoot at.
And the tortoise. Cape Buffalo. I'm sorry, the Cape Buffalo has balls. Like, I've never seen a white. I've never seen a white tail target have balls on it. This Cape Buffalo has testicles on it. That's as real as it gets, folks.
Yeah, I mean, how many bonus points do you get on a backyard range if you're like, hey, I'm calling it, guys. How many points do I get for shooting this thing in the nuts?
Exactly. But, I mean, that's what would happen. All right, there'd be wagers. I'd be like, all right, yeah. You hit this, I give you. You hit the balls, you get $5.
Yep, every bit. Like, so I thought that company was pretty cool, and they had so many options. Yeah. I can't say if I'm spending that kind of money that I'm not going to invest into Reinhardt targets, just because that's what I've used. The replacement vinyl's, the foam's so easy to pull. And I can't tell you how easy these are to pull or anything like that, because I didn't get a chance to shoot them.
Yep.
But it's nice to see a new 3D target company come to market. And they've been around a while, but they just haven't been a big player in our space as what they could have been.
Yeah.
So it was pretty neat. That was pretty cool. Now, speaking of Reinhardt, more of the competition series that we're all used to, they actually teamed up with Spiderweb, which makes the box kind of like a box target.
Yep.
And they have what they call the Speed Unlimited target, and it's mainly geared for crossbows. With this, if you've got any of these new high-end 450, 500 feet per second crossbows, like you can tear a regular target up pretty quick with one of these crossbows, because they've got wider bolt, like the bolts are a little bit thicker than a traditional arrow, and they're going super fast, and they're short, so it doesn't take much of penetration for them to be up into the fletchings and mess your fletchings up. Well, this target is supposed to be like the greatest end-all beat-all target on the market right now for crossbows, and supposed to still be easy to pull and things like that, affordable, and there's no speed rating, so it's supposed to be unlimited.
And what's the, this is a target, or would this be labeled under crossbows?
No, it's a target. It's a 20-inch by 20-inch square target that you're able to shoot crossbow bolts into.
Okay, and what's the name of the target itself? The Speed Unlimited?
Yeah, I think it's Reinhardt Speed Unlimited.
Okay.
And it's cool because it's two different companies working together in that space. You got Spiderweb targets and Reinhardt, and granted, behind the scenes, they might be made by the same people, but this is the kind of the first time they've brought a target together to market.
Yeah. Okay. All right, I'm looking for an image of it real quick. Okay, I see it. Really what it looks, I'll be honest with you, it looks cool, but from just the looks of it, it looks like they're, it almost looks like, and I would have to talk to someone from Reinhardt to get all the ins and outs on it, but it looks like one of Spiderweb's targets, but with the Reinhardt logo on it.
Oh, 100%. It definitely looks just like a Spiderweb target. I would imagine there's an internal layer there that Reinhardt's added to it or something like that.
Yeah.
But not knowing exactly. But the fact that I've got a Reinhardt block target that we use for my son's crossbow, and it can be a nightmare sometimes when after a few shots. So that's one thing that I know he needs. So he
you mean as far as ease of pull?
Ease of pull and just not tearing up. Like, you put broadheads on it with a crossbow and it just seems like it eats them.
Yeah.
So just to improve the time that he gets on the range, we need a really good target for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I can remember buying a target. I don't remember what brand it was, but if it was brand new and I was using the wrong type of arrows, it's almost like the friction caused melting.
Yep.
And it would stick in there and it would take me forever. I thought I was going to break some arrows trying to pull them out of there.
Yep. I know I've had one or two like that as well. And it seems like it's, if you go cheap, you pay the price. And then I had bought one at Walmart one time. I still have the photos in my phone today because I'm like, I want to post these one day.
Yeah.
First day out of the box, I go and shoot it 20 yards, right through it. I'm like, what the heck? Maybe it's a fluke. Next one, buried up to the fletchings. I was like, well, this target doesn't work.
Yeah.
So, but it was marketed as an actual target for you and I to use.
Yeah.
So, but
it is what it is at that point. You know, again, you get what you pay for.
If targets, especially, you get what you pay for with targets.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. What else?
So this product was released last year. I remember people bringing it to my attention, but it's the Nested Z8 tree stand system.
Okay. And
basically, you can buy a backpack that's designed to carry your tree stand, your climbing sticks. It comes with the tree stand and the climbing sticks. Basically, it's a nice mobile hunting package for $550.
Okay. That seems affordable.
Yeah, it's really affordable. They don't really give out like a lot of weights and stuff on everything, but it's still fairly lightweight. The sticks themselves, in order to fit in this nested system, instead of them having like a straight singular pole in the middle, what we're used to seeing, they have dual sides. So it's a little bigger, they're a little bulkier, but it has a huge stepping surface, which is unusual for most mobile hunting setups.
And when you say stepping service, you just mean the amount of space they have available to put a foot on.
Correct. Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. They're kind of bigger and a little bulkier than what a lot of climbing sticks are on the market, but the weight wise, they're not crazy too big. I personally like to have more than three climbing sticks on a mobile setup, so it kind of defeats the purpose for me a little bit. Without the accessories that you can attach to them. And I don't know if these actually come with those. Oh, shoot. What are they called? We just talked about them.
Aiders?
Stirrups. Aiders.
Stirrups. Yep. Okay. Yep. Yep.
Yep. So it's a pretty nice, neat, well-packaged setup to where it's quiet, easy to maneuver and pack around. Not a product that I probably would see myself buying. The simple cause of I like carrying five climbing sticks instead of three.
Right. Right. But I will tell you this. I'm looking at this right now, and the first question that came to mind, will the tree stand go set in a crooked tree? Because a lot of hang-ons do not, but they have a version, and I'm not sure how good it is, a version of the old Lone Wolf Batwing on the back of it from a design standpoint. And that looks like I could shimmy that tree stand in an angled tree and level it out, especially with the cables.
Yeah, so it has adjustments on the post. There's multiple adjustment layers on the post, and then the bat wing should adjust kind of your left and right motions.
Yep. Okay, so that looks pretty slick, to be honest with you. Now, we just got done having this conversation of you get what you pay for. And if you're going, let's go to what would be Elevated, a brand like Elevated, right? If you were going to go get their micro everything that they have and some of these other brands that have micro tree stands like
Lone Wolf XP, Custom Gear,
Custom XOP, Gear,
stuff like that.
Yep, exactly. Right there, you're looking at thousands of dollars compared to $450 for an entire package, including a pack. Knowing the quality of tethered gear and some of these other lightweight tree stand gears that are out there, I look at something like this and I would be concerned on the quality of it on the low end. Would you have those same concerns, not even touching the product, just from the price point?
Yes, and this gets into the fact of did we get caught up in the marketing and need to have the spend more money to have a better product? The truth is, I don't know how good it's going to hold up. Yep. Are you willing to take a $550 gamble on a product that you're unfamiliar with that looks like it's going to work versus a product that's $1,000 and everybody that you know that you follow on social media is using?
Right.
So that's kind of the setup here. I mean, you look at the Elevate tree stands, you're talking $420 to $460 for just the stand itself.
Right. And now you're getting everything.
Yeah, you're getting everything for $550 or something.
Yeah, $550. Yep. Now, obviously, shipping. I wonder, this also must be a direct-to-consumer product at the moment.
Yeah, I don't
because
remember
Because I don't see it. I don't see it anywhere when I go to Shields and walk around.
Okay, I'll do a quick Google search and see if there's anything available.
I'm also going to look at the climbing sticks here. Interesting, though, because every other customer or every other climbing stick has always been a single pole in the middle, right, that folds up.
Correct.
And these guys have the double poles, and it allows, which is cool, because it allows you to get your foot as you're climbing all the way to the tree. And I'm not saying that the single posts are better, but this does offer like opportunity to put like from a design standpoint to put like the stuff in that space that is created when you stack those sticks. Like you could stuff a coat in there, or you could stuff something else in that space that is taken up where you can't necessarily do that. Maybe you could on the inside, but it almost creates a box that you could use. I don't know. I'm intrigued by this.
Yeah, the biggest thing that I see with the sticks is you're not going to be able to use them on a smaller diameter tree.
Okay.
Judging by where they mount to the tree on the back, the cleats or whatever you want to call those.
Yeah. Okay, I see. Okay. Yeah, it doesn't look like there's really any grip as well on the inside of those.
Correct. It looks like it's designed for a big tree rather than...
Yep.
And you might be hunting an area where there's only big trees, and that's a great thing. But a lot of times for me being mobile, like I don't always have the perfect size tree.
Right. And it looks like they have a string or what's that kind of rope? It's not a strap.
Yeah.
It's like a rope. Paracord.
Not paracord. That's not the strong stuff that you want to use.
Anyway, some kind
our mobile heavy... guys are going to be like, oh my gosh, how can you not think of this stuff? But
yeah, but a heavy duty rope. It doesn't look heavy duty. It looks thin, like it looks like paracord, but it has to have a safety rating on it, right?
Yeah, for TMA standards.
Yeah, here's a picture of like a lone wolf or other tree stand straps on it as well. So there, it looks like there are different versions of tightening this.
I will say the reviews of random people online are not real high on this system.
Okay.
But looking at it, like I feel like the price point, and if you can build off of that product and idea, like you might end up with the product that we all really want at a price that we can afford.
Yeah. Yeah. That's still pretty interesting. I would love to... I don't know. I would have a very hard time getting rid of any tethered gear or my current system because I'm so comfortable with it. But this, it does have me intrigued, I will say, especially the price point for the product. I would have to get it in my hands, and my guess is that I would easily be able to tell you the quality just from holding it.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't take much when you actually have used the good and the bad stuff on the market to be like, oh, this is something I would want to use. Yeah.
But with direct-to-consumer, we must remember that not all brands do this. They say they cut out the middleman, and they do. You know, if they're direct-to-consumer, in some way cut out the middleman. But this right here is, maybe it's able to be priced at that point because they cut out the middleman, and eventually, just like all companies, that middleman margin shrinks and is now part of the income and revenue of the company once they gain popularity.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, I think that we were sold on the direct-to-consumer market as we were saving money on getting a higher product, but the truth of the matter is a lot of those products are now the same price, if not more.
Exactly.
They just get to make more money.
Exactly. All right, what's next, if anything?
So one of the things that I thought intriguing was, and I've talked about this in years past, is like apps and technology that's coming to market. And one of the things that we still didn't have is a social media platform for the hunting community. Like we think Instagram is, but we continue to get censored. We know Facebook's not, TikTok's not, but there was a company out there that I never heard of called Camo Space.
Okay.
And that's one of the places to where maybe I should start gravitating towards and putting out content and actually viewing content that a deer hunter like me wants to see.
Yeah.
But
man, I hate to say it. It's just, this is something that's been done.
Yes. Right? It has.
And I know there is every, let's start off with, there was like a whitetails.com or deerhunting.com or something like that. They put a lot of things. I don't think that gained traction. What was the other company that just folded?
Yeah, not Waypoint.
Wild.
Go Wild.
Go yep. Wild kind of has yeah. faded away.
Yeah, Go Wild turned into a – yeah, I liked them, but it turned into a shopping center. Like, it was like, hey, here's our products. And I was like, this is not what I came here for.
Right. It was almost like that was their goal moving forward, is to create the space and then start selling to the people that they got there. Yep. You know what I mean? So,
which is brilliant marketing if it worked.
Yeah, exactly.
But their prices were checked.
Yeah. And so now we have what, to me, just at first glance, is this. I mean, it looks like it's got some backing. I mean, I'm looking at Michael Waddell on the very – so they yep. must have enough money to pay this guy to do this. But everybody's done it. And so now what you're doing is you're saying to a company and the popular people, right, let's say like the Michael Waddells, hey, guys, I am going to post either additional content or I'm going to post the same content on a different page. Now you have to go and come over here to watch it or whatever. And I get it. I posted a post last night and shared it today about a gun collections for what type of guns you should collect if you're an outdoorsman. I did a podcast on it, and in no way, shape or form is it getting the traction that a regular post that I has. Why? Because it's about firearms. Does that help here? Maybe. But you know how much people would have to see it, even though I do have reduced visibility on Instagram, to make up for that?
Oh, ridiculous. I mean,
it's ridiculous. It would be a ridiculous amount. And so I know they've tried to do this before. I hope it works, but there's got to be a place for they got to do something different than what's already been done. And I don't think throwing money at it will solve it. Something has to happen.
I think that they told me that it was 25,000 users on this app right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's face it, like my Facebook page has 25,000 followers on it, on one of those pages. So mm-hmm. your market and your accessibility to other people outside of the hunting community, as well as the hunting community, is on these bigger apps that are already there. The problem is just the censoring that isn't going away.
Yeah, it's not going away, but it has also been proven that censorship really doesn't matter to a lot of people.
No.
I mean, I hate to say it. People bitch and complain about it, but they're not, you know, there's not a lot of guys going, you know what? I made a post about my deer. I'm so mad at it. I'm dropping everything, right? You would think that if you were that pissed off about it, these brands would be coming over in droves, and then their marketing would be like, hey, come to me. But because hunting is just a small part of life, and all the rest of the life happens and is not censored, people are not going to come over in droves to these places and post multiple times and read the same thing in multiple places. Does that make sense?
Correct. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, it just sucks that it has to be the censorship and stuff, and maybe it will change, right? You see, I read a documentary about – or a documentary. I read an article recently about Mark Zuckerberg and how he has a PR team now about his looks and his image. And he has to remember that conservatives – and let's just – I'm using the word – not to get political here, but I'm using the term conservatives in relationship to hunting, right? I don't know a lot of liberal hunters, and I'm sure that they're out there, but – conservatives and how they vote are also, you know, I don't want to get into it. What I'm getting at here is there's a certain group of people who hunt, and those people, like, they're trying to make Zuckerberg more in touch with those people. And so when a company's doing that, that means there might be some less censorship coming down. I mean, look at what Elon Musk has done with X. Right? Is it the same as Twitter? No, it's not. And they're not censoring people as much anymore. And so I think with the current administration administration being in there, we're going to start to see conservative views being more accessible online, thus hunting more accessible online through these major programs too.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. And I could be, because I'm wrong a lot. So
yeah, I mean, just to touch on Mark Zuckerberg, we've seen him hunt. We've seen him fish. We've seen him doing jiu-jitsu and all this stuff that a lot of us like to do that are in this space. But I think he's just got a big group of people that's kind of kept him from being able to like release that to the public. But
yeah,
hey, yeah, he's playing with a different set of cards than we are. But I think he's not much different than we are when it comes to that side of things. His viewpoints probably aren't off when it comes to hunting.
Your little one grew 3 inches overnight. Adorable. Also, expensive. Sell their pint-sized pieces on Depop and list them in minutes with no selling fees. Because somewhere, a dad refuses to pay full price for the clothes his kids will outgrow tomorrow. And he's ready to buy your son's entire wardrobe right now. Consider your future growth spurt budget secured. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
Starting a business can seem like a daunting task, unless you have a partner like Shopify. They have the tools you need to start and grow your business. From designing a website to marketing to selling and beyond, Shopify can help with everything you need. There's a reason millions of companies like Mattel, Heinz, and Allbirds continue to trust and use them. With Shopify on your side, turn your big business idea into... Sign up for your $1 per month trial at shopify.com/special offer.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what his PR team needs to do. They need to schedule a public land run-and-gun hunt with, like... Zach Fehrenbaugh from The Hunting Public. And I'd watch that. Those two guys go out into the wilderness and try to slay a giant.
That would be hilarious. Or any deer. I would love it.
I would watch it. Okay. So there's that. I hope that the company takes off.
It's just uphill battle. Like, it's a tough situation to be in.
Exactly. What's next, if anything? Let's go through about two more, if we have two more, because we've been chatting a long time here.
Okay. I'm going to do a hot streak of just go through a bunch of stuff. Trophy Scan is a digital app that you can download to measure deer antlers. Does it work very well? I can't say that it does. I had a kid test it the other day in the booth this weekend, and it added an extra 20 inches to a deer, so I was pumped for that score.
I'm sold. You tell me where. I'm going to go through and tell everybody I got room full of Boone and Crockett deer now.
Yeah. So I can't say that it's real accurate. I haven't tested it myself, but I watched him do it, and he'd come out 20 inches higher than what this deer actually was. So I appreciated the extra inches. But I think they're onto something as far as making that a little bit easier and guesstimating and things like that. That was fun. Got to check out the Baku. You know, e-bikes are a huge rage in the market, and it just blows my mind that the market continues to just grow and grow and grow in that space. And I've got a couple, but seeing the Baku electric motorcycle, like, it's basically a dirt bike in person, that thing's a beast. Like, it's an actual dirt bike with a huge battery, and I'm thinking, like, why would I want an electric bicycle? Why wouldn't I just get an electric dirt bike?
Yeah.
So that thing was pretty cool.
Hey, I got to tell you a story real quick. I have a quiet cat, all right? And this was a one day. I took a path through public land to backdoor a piece of public land that was closer to the road, but I had to go through private property to get to it. So I backdoored it through a large chunk. And I went 6.1 miles on my e-bike in an hour, I think it was. Less than that. It was less than an hour. Maybe somewhere between 30 minutes to an hour, probably closer to that 45-minute range, whatever. 6 miles in, 6 miles back. And I did that in a day. Now imagine walking that.
Dude.
You know what I mean? And I'm telling you right now, I'm like, holy shit. And because it is a battery. It's not a motorized vehicle in the eyes of that state's rules and regulations. And so I look at that, I'm going to go, huge loophole. I'm going to take advantage of it.
Yeah. And for me, like, I've been running e-bikes for years, a lot of it on private. But what I found the most success with running an e-bike, like I like them for hunting. I like them for even turkey hunting as well because it's quieter and I can sneak into the roost a lot quicker. But the truth is, it's shed season. You know how many open cornfields we have here and how long it takes me to walk them? I can ride them on an e-bike and pick up just as many sheds in literally 10% of the time and effort. And that's when, for me, like I can just hop in, I can hit two or three farms in a day instead of just hitting one farm and just not even getting half of it. But that e-bike system's like, they're not going away. They are an asset, and I find more and more ways to use them for fun. I did switch to a dual suspension bike, though, Dan.
Yeah.
If you like comfort, I know you got bad knees and stuff. Dual suspension bikes are way more comfortable. Not as hunter-friendly, but really enjoyable on the trail.
Yeah. Baku electric bike. I'm going to their website right now, and I want to look at this new... What's the name of the...
Oh, crap.
Let's see what they got here. But it's a legit dirt bike, right?
Yeah, it's literally a full-size dirt bike. Yeah, it's huge.
I don't see it. It's Baku, right?
Yeah.
The other thing I like about the Baku bikes is they have dual drives. They have some of them that are dual drives, meaning there's a different motor for both wheels. And so, long story short, that means more torque. And you're able to, you know, basically four-wheel drive for a bicycle is what it is.
Puma X24.
The Luma X24?
Puma. With a P.
Okay.
You're looking at 80 volts on the motor.
Are you on the website?
Yeah.
Okay. I must be. Is it under e-scooters or is it under e-bikes?
It's under e-moto. There's a Puma X22 and a X24.
Aha. Uh-huh. All right, now I got, oh, my God, dude.
Yeah, look at that beast.
That 6 miles turns into, you know, 15 minutes with this thing.
So the guy that I was talking to said he got a chance to test one, and he did 60 miles on it.
Yeah.
And, like, I look, it's like, where's the battery? And he said, basically, everything under that frame is the battery. And I was like, holy crap, I can't imagine how much those things cost just to replace the battery.
Yeah, what about the weight?
The weight, it's in that dirt bike range. I think he said like 300 and something. Like it was a beast, if I remember correctly, like 3-something.
Yeah. The issue becomes part of the e-bike loophole has wattage with it.
Yeah. So, this is not going to fit under that hunting scenario.
Yeah, this is not. Land. Yeah, exactly. Yep, definitely.
This is a toy.
Yep, exactly. All right, yeah, this is rated power 6,000 to 22,000 watts. So with a max speed of 77 miles an hour, holy shit.
Yeah, right. It's that had an e-bike electric motorcycle market is crazy.
A
couple things I want to touch on before we get off here.
Yep.
So if you've ever seen where you can attach your phone to optics, whether it be a spotting scope or binos, and then take video and things like that, some of those products – that you got to be customized to the optic, customized to the phone, all this stuff, and they can be really expensive to set up. Well, Hawk has one for like $30, and it worked great, and it was extremely fast, but at Hawk Optics, really easy to set up. And I've always struggled with these new iPhones with having three different cameras, and this lady was able to just take my phone, put it on a set of optics in like 30 seconds, and I was like, sold. Where can I buy one? She's like, well, they're not ready for sale yet, but you get a chance to look at it before they are. So hopefully NWTF or maybe the Harrisburg show, there'll be some available. Really like that. And then last, Stan has a release, an index finger release, which is most of what hunters use. It has a clicker in it. It's the first index finger release that I've seen with a clicker. You can still punch the trigger. You can rip through the shot. But you actually, when you anchor in, you'll hear the click just like you would with a target release, and then you can pull through. So that I thought that was pretty neat.
Do they have that same technology in releases for middle finger releases, like trigger fingers too? Because I'm screwed. I can't use it.
I think you can make it work. I think you can just flip it, flip your nub on the other side of it, and go. So, question.
Yeah.
Do you actually, I mean, it's natural for you now, but like, do you have any issues with anchoring or anything like that you have to custom fit?
not anymore. When I did it initially, for the first 2 years, I was struggling trying to find, but depending, like I use a thumb release now. Uh-huh. So I take the nub and I put it right here where the jaw meets the neck. And it's, okay, it's like a second anchor. I mean, when I mean anchor, it's a real anchor.
Oh yeah.
And so I'm right here. I put it right in this jawbone here and then everything lines up. You know, I use a kisser button. I use a peep sight and it's just another little poop and then you, and you're good to go, dude.
Well, I hope that's not going to be the new trend in archery. It's like, need an extra anchor point? Get rid of your finger.
Get rid of, chop your finger off, right? Love it. Love it.
So,
we got one more before we call her quits here. Are you done?
I've got one that I'm not going to say like anybody else should buy this one, but I went there with the advice of shooting a particular bow. And as bad as I hate to say it, I shot that one bow and I told the guy, I said, I don't want to like this bow. I said, but I was asked to shoot this bow to give a review on it.
Okay.
And I picked it up. He adjusted it to my draw length real quick. I came to full draw and I was like, dang it. That was the first thing I said was, dang it. And he's like, what? And I said, it fits perfect.
Yeah.
And then I released the arrow and I released another arrow and I was like, ah, crap. Well, there went $2,000. But I did really like the PSC and I haven't shot a PSC in years. It's the 33DS. Or Mach 33DS. It was an impressive bow. I hate to say that. Me not being one to spend that kind of money,
wrong.
But wow.
There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. And I'll tell you why here. Back in the day, PSE, they were known for, we have the fastest bows, right? That's what they were known for. Our arrows travel fast out of these bows. They had smaller
brace heights.
Yep. They had smaller brace heights. The draw cycles were not friendly at all. No. You had to rip your damn shoulder out sometimes trying to get these bows pulled back. But you knew that when you released it, that arrow was going to be going faster than any other. Speed kills. I thought that was one of their marketing strategies.
Back in the dream season days.
Yep. Speed kills. And so whatever, take that however you want. Now, I think what happened is something happened there and they realized that speed is not as important as being right around the time when Elite came out. Remember, Elite has always been that bow company. What they call that shootability that came out with the shootability and smooth draw cycles, less hand shock, making this bow shootable and friendly. And I think PSE kind of came to a turning point. This is my guess here. And they said, we can't do this anymore. We have to have bows that are more friendly on the draw cycle. They're more friendly on the valley. They're more friendly, friendlier axle to axles and brace heights and things like that. And I will say, when I was looking for my last bow 4 years ago, it came down to a PSE, a Bowtech, and I can't. And it might have even been a Matthews. And I have never been a fan of Matthews, but PSE, in my personal opinion, has made one of the biggest strides in turning their bows into friendlier shooting bows than anybody else on the market has. And I can see it. I haven't shot this new bow, but I can see it. I can see why their bow has been like, ooh, I like this bow.
Yep. I was extremely impressed and I didn't go there shooting a bunch of bows because at the end of the day, Hoyt's not there. Matthews isn't there. Like, a lot of your big name players are not there, so it's not a fair comparison place anymore. It used to be.
Nope. Yep.
But, man, even though I've got a hook up on bows, I may have to switch and pick up a PSE this year. It made a big impression on me. And
what did you like about it?
So, for me, there's two things that I like about a bow. And the first thing is the grip and how that grip fits my hand. And I don't have a huge hand, but I like where the shelf of the rest and where it meets the V of my hand between my thumb and my index finger, my forefinger.
Yep.
Um, But where that sits in, is that going to be replicated every time I pick up that bow without looking at it? And yep. That was one of the first bows in a long time that when it fit my hand right off the bat, and I was like, okay, there's step one. Step two is a string angle. And you can have a 33-inch axle-to-axle bow from one manufacturer to the next, but the string angles may differ because of the roll of the cam. And that string angle fit my face like my old Hoyt VipreTech from like 2005. And that's exactly what I felt like when I picked that bow up and hit my riser, when I had the grip, and when I anchored in. Now, everything in between, the hand shock was way more far in advance. But those two feelings, because that's the only two things that touch on this bow, is the string and your hand on the grip. The rest of it in between is just a benefit and how it, user preference. But that right there was enough for me to say, oh. And then when I released the arrow, and then another arrow, and I was like, oh, dang it. I think I just spent a lot of money.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you this right now. This is based just on a number on a website. I shoot better with longer axle to axles. And 30-inch axle to axle, maybe I'll get back to it someday. But right now, I'm looking at something in that 30, like I'm guessing the absolute lowest that I would go, it would be 31. But I'm going to probably be shooting a 32 or 33 this upcoming year. And it's again, that's user preference. Now, I could shoot this bow and be like, I don't need it. Because you're right, axle to axle isn't as important now as what I think it used to be with the bigger cam systems that people are shooting. And, you know, when they roll off there, it's not a true 30-inch axle to axle because the string angle is important. But there's something about for me personally, I like a longer axle to axle.
Yep, and our draw lengths are probably not similar. Like, I'm stretching at a 28, and that bow felt really good at a 28. You're probably, what, 29.5?
30.
30, okay. Yep. Yeah, so a 33-inch axle-to-axle bow for you is going to feel completely different than a 33 on me, but I really like this bow at 33. And it's carbon, it's got a reduced weight and stuff like that. And I'm going to go shoot some other bows on the market before I make a purchase, but that's the first time in a long time I've picked up a PSA and said that is at the top of the list right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think their brand is doing it right. Now, they've always done it right for that niche market, the speed kills market, but last 5 years to 10, I mean, they've started, I think they identified it is what I'm getting at, and they started making the changes to fix that.
I agree.
So, cool. Well, hey, man, one hell of a conversation today. Thanks for taking time to hop on the podcast and walk through some of these products and brands with us. It was a good conversation. Also, make sure that you guys go check out huntinggeardeals.com. Long story short, he scours the internet on a weekly, daily basis, and he is looking for discount codes, you're looking for sales, you're looking for new interesting products. You have a lot of blog entries as far as
gear reviews and things like that, reviews, shopping guides.
Yep, shopping guides like that. So
to touch base on that, I've been slacking off. So if there's anybody out there, and you can shoot me an email or contact me on social media, but I'm a little slower. I'm looking to partner with somebody. I need help with the daily deals. Just like how I started with Mike Higman originally when he started this website, my other business is absorbing 99% of my time that I have available. So I could use somebody to do the grunt style work and help me with these daily deals. So
this is what I would say. You're going to pay him, right?
Yep. Yep. Well, there will be a payment process involved.
Yeah. So if you're looking to get your foot in the door in the hunting industry, if you're a young kid or you decided I don't want to go to college or I want to get my foot in the door in some way, shape or form into the hunting industry, this might be an awesome opportunity for someone who is entry level to get in and help you out.
Yep. And that's exactly how I started. I literally volunteered because I heard him on your podcast talking about this hunting gear deal stuff. So I would literally just shoot him an email and say, hey, I found these on sale. And then one day he calls me like 6 months later. He's like, hey, you still interested in coming to help? Fast forward a couple years and I bought the business from him. actually supported my family with this business until the real estate market kind of picked up and I came over to Whitetail Properties. And now, right now, the commissions on the real estate side of it pay just a little bit more.
A little bit better.
on the broadhead. So
yeah, there you go.
But it's a fun process, man. I really enjoy it, and I'm not going to stop. I'm just looking for some help.
Yep, absolutely. Cool. Well, there you go. Cameron, man, appreciate your time. Have a good rest of your week.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.